Hello and welcome to Archimedes, the evidence-based section of the Archives of Diseases of Childhood. Well, at least the more concentratedly evidence-based bit. Do you know, the majority of it really is evidence-based. It's just that this bit sort of puts it in a little bow, makes it more edible and potentially a little less work to digest than some of the other bits that are raw, chunky and the sort of ingredients that you really want to work with. But this is maybe the finesse version that you can just nibble on your way home. So in this podcast, we talk about the clinical questions that people have sent in, the answers that they've brought them, and the appraisal that they've done of those answers in order to generate an understanding about what the best way of answering that question is. We also learn a little bit more each month about something to do with evidence-based practice. And this month, we're thinking all about framing. There will be many listening to this who have wanted to display something that is visually impressive or meaningful to them so that the world can enjoy it, and in doing so, seek the right frame to fit and enhance it. There will hopefully be very few, ideally none, who have considered how to make a crime that they have committed appear to be undertaken by somebody else. And somewhere in between those numbers, probably, will be those of us who have written and conducted a survey. Loads of us run surveys. We do them as a way of establishing how people say that they are acting, what they say they feel about something that they do or are affected by, or what they say they do and what an activity is that occurs. Now, nearly all of us that do surveys do them with good intentions, looking for the truthful answer rather than some sort of biased PR job, but not many of us think about the methodology of surveys. Now, that isn't to say that people do surveys thoughtlessly, and they might pilot it for understanding, or they might check the mechanism of whatever online system it is they're using, but they don't often delve into the mechanics that sit behind. A really good survey is one that might use a validated questionnaire or produce a validated methodology. It will have examined the order of the questions, the number of questions displayed at one time, and the phrasing in that order, because all of those things can influence the response. That type of survey will have been shown to distinguish between the different extremes of the population, perhaps, and demonstrated either its stability, if it's looking at something that you would expect to be the same across time, like a core element of people, or the variability, if it's looking at how things change over time in different states. How exactly that survey is put out into the world, how it arrives with you and how it is read, frames the questions. And even when the person responding is talking about exactly the same truth, those different frames might mean that you get different types of answers, even though the reality is identical. To be fair, it is not often that we use the results of surveys trying to direct our practice in an evidence-based way. They're not a great method for determining the efficacy of a treatment or the accuracy of a diagnostic test or any prognostic information. But we might well use them in order to support what we do here or to try to understand why or how things happen in the way that they do. And if we're going to use them like that, then those answers might frame how we feel, and from how we feel about how we act on things. And so, even though they are rarely directly related to patient practice, knowing if the survey that you are reading is valid, important, and applicable is as meaningful in that setting as it is in those direct clinical care ones as well. Now, our clinical question this month comes from Nina Vazipur, Katrina Evers, Hannah Schmidt, Nicole Ritz, and Alexandra Goitschke at the Department of Infectious Diseases and Vaccinology at the University Children's Hospital of Basel in Switzerland. They ask a question about the duration of antibiotic treatment in pediatric acute focal bacterial nephritis, which was the diagnosis made in a 12-year-old girl who had presented to them with a history of recurrent UTIs. On one of these, she was admitted and MRI scan done that was suggestive of this diagnosis, acute focal bacterial nephritis, and was treated with a 2-week course of intravenous ceftriaxone. Now, the background to this is a kid that had been very thoroughly investigated for recurrent episodes of pyelonephritis, each of them growing an E. coli, without any real risk factors underlying. They thought that 2 weeks would clear it all out and it would be sorted. But 6 weeks later, further MRI, further clinical symptoms, and it was back again with a further pyelonephritic episode. And so the team wondered, would starting off with a longer course, maybe 4 weeks of IV antibiotics compared to the 2 weeks, have done the job and reduced the risk of recurrences? They went away and they searched Embase, Medline, PubMed, and even Google Scholar. They didn't restrict by language, they looked at everything they possibly could, and they came back with 155 potential articles, dropping down to only 3, and then looked at the references to see if anything else arrived. What did they find? Well, they found one cohort study and 2 RCTs. The cohort study was 127 children, and the RCTs were 109 and 80 kids. And they're all from the same author working in the same centre. Now, that in itself gives you a little cause for concern. There are 2 things that are worth checking when you see multiple studies going through from one place, and that is, are they actually separate studies or are they split to the same study? The other thing is thinking about, well, if that's what happens in this one place, how generalizable it is to other locations. That's not to say that it's wrong. It's to say that you have less certainty about it. It's a little bit like balancing on a unicycle versus going round on one of those go-kart things that people have got with little pedals but 4 wheels on. It's that degree of sort of uncertainty that you've got around it. And in this situation, it's quite hard to really bury down on these things. However, these authors did a superb job. They really checked through this to try to get to a real understanding of what's going on here. The smaller study was the earlier one, and that compared antibiotic treatment at 2 to 3 weeks, looking at relapse failures and so on. And then the later study with a bigger number of kids used a slightly different reference standard in order to diagnose it, and also compared the longer versions of treatment versus shorter versions of treatment. What they saw was that if you gave a 2-week treatment arm, around 1 in 10 kids to somewhere around 1 in 5 kids did get a relapse or a recurrence of their infections, where if you extended that initial treatment to a full 3 weeks, it dropped down to next to nothing, maybe only 1 in that longer treatment group. Now, there is a balance to be struck here, and they discussed it in their article. Not everybody goes through the full diagnostic procedure, so some are a presumed one of this situation. Longer antibiotic treatments might lead to more problems, and it might be that within this group of people that have got this acute focal bacterial nephritis, there are some that are at greater risk for relapse, and possibly there might be radiological features that suggest that, and maybe those are the ones that need the longer course versus the shorter course. There are no trials to look at that, although within the article they link out to some thoughts that they'd given to the data there. Quite reasonably, their conclusion, their clinical bottom line from this is, given the nature of the trials that we have, a 3-week duration of antimicrobial treatment versus a 2-week or shorter duration does reduce the risk of relapse. But remember that that has a degree of uncertainty about it, and that it isn't very many trials, it isn't very many kids, it isn't very many relapses, and it's a single centre that's producing this evidence. So, that's our whip through the kidneys and frames of the world this month. Next time, who knows what we'll be talking about? It could be how to measure snow. It could be the diagnostic value of a twinkling left eye. It's unlikely, but you never know until you open the podcast in your feed. So hopefully you will hear from us soon and all will be well in your world. Until then, good night and good luck.